Chapter 13. As autumn wore into winter, and the high tops were streaked with the first snows, the discomforts of practice in the dales began to make themselves felt. Driving for hours with frozen feet, climbing to the high barns in biting winds which seared and flattened the wiry hill grass. The interminable stripping off in draughty buildings, and the washing of hands and chest in buckets of cold water, using scrubbing soap and often a piece of sacking for a towel. I really found out the meaning of chapped hands. When there was a rush of work, my hands were never quite dry, and the little red fissures crept up almost to my elbows. This was when some small animal work came as a blessed relief. To step out of the rough, hard routine for a while, to walk into a warm drawing room instead of a cowhouse, and tackle something less formidable than a horse or bull. And among all those comfortable drawing rooms, there was none so beguiling as Mrs. Pumphrey's. Mrs. Pumphrey was an elderly widow. Her late husband, a beer baron whose breweries and pubs were scattered widely over the broad bosom of Yorkshire, had left her a vast fortune and a beautiful house on the outskirts of Darrowby. Here she lived with a large staff of servants, a gardener, a chauffeur, and Tricky Woo. Tricky Woo was a Pekingese and the apple of his mistress's eye. Standing now in the magnificent doorway, I furtively rubbed the toes of my shoes on the back of my trousers and blew on my cold hands. I could almost see the deep armchair drawn close to the leaping flames, the tray of cocktail biscuits, the bottle of excellent sherry. Because of the sherry, I was always careful to time my visits for half an hour before lunch. A maid answered my ring, beaming on me as an honoured guest, and led me to the room crammed with expensive furniture and littered with glossy magazines and the latest novels. Mrs. Pumphrey, in a high-backed chair by the fire, put down her book with a cry of delight.
"Tricky! Tricky! Here's your Uncle Harriet!"
I had been made an uncle very early, and, sensing the advantages of the relationship, had made no objection. Tricky, as always, bounded from his cushion, leapt onto the back of a sofa, and put his paws on my shoulders. He then licked my face thoroughly before retiring, exhausted. He was soon exhausted, because he was given roughly twice the amount of food needed for a dog of his size, and it was the wrong kind of food.
"Oh, Mr. Harriet," Mrs. Pumphrey said, looking at her pet anxiously, "I'm so glad you've come. Tricky has gone frop-bot again."
This ailment, not to be found in any textbook, was her way of describing the symptoms of Tricky's impacted anal glands. When the glands filled up, he showed discomfort by sitting down suddenly in mid-walk, and his mistress would rush to the phone in great agitation.
"Mr. Harriet, please come. He's going frop-bot again."
I hoisted the little dog onto a table, and by pressure on the anus with a pad of cotton wool, I evacuated the glands. It baffled me that the Peak was always so pleased to see me. Any dog who could still like a man who grabbed him and squeezed his bottom hard every time they met had to have an incredibly forgiving nature. But Tricky never showed any resentment. In fact, he was an outstandingly equable little animal, bursting with intelligence, and I was genuinely attached to him. It was a pleasure to be his personal physician. The squeezing over, I lifted my patient from the table, noticing the increased weight, the padding of extra flesh over the ribs. "You know, Mrs. Pumphrey, you're overfeeding him again. Didn't I tell you to cut out all those pieces of cake and give him more protein?"
"Oh, yes, Mr. Harriet," Mrs. Pumphrey wailed. "But what can I do? He's so tired of chicken."
I shrugged. It was hopeless. I allowed the maid to lead me to the palatial bathroom where I always performed a ritual hand-washing after the operation. It was a huge room with a fully stocked dressing table, massive greenware and rows of glass shelves laden with toilet preparations. My private guest towel was laid out next to a slab of expensive soap. Then I returned to the drawing room. My sherry glass was filled, and I settled down by the fire to listen to Mrs. Pumphrey. It couldn't be called a conversation because she did all the talking, but I always found it rewarding. Mrs. Pumphrey was likable, gave widely to charities, and would help anybody in trouble. She was intelligent and amusing and had a lot of waffling charm, but most people have a blind spot, and hers was Tricky Woo. The tales she told about her darling ranged far into the realms of fantasy, and I waited eagerly for the next instalment.
"Oh, Mr. Harriet, I have the most exciting news. Tricky has a pen pal. Yes, He wrote a letter to the editor of Doggy World, enclosing a donation, and told him that even though he was descended from a long line of Chinese emperors, he had decided to come down and mingle freely with the common dogs. He asked the editor to seek out a pen pal for him among the dogs he knew so that they could correspond to their mutual benefit. And for this purpose, Tricky said he would adopt the name of Mr. Utterbunkum. And you know, he received the most beautiful letter from the editor. I could imagine the sensible man leaping upon this potential gold mine, who said he would like to introduce Bonzo Fotheringham, a lonely Dalmatian who would be delighted to exchange letters with a new friend in Yorkshire. I sipped the sherry. Tricky snored on my lap. Mrs. Pumphrey went on. But I'm so disappointed about the new summer house. You know, I got it specially for Tricky, so we could sit outside together on warm afternoons. Well, it's such a nice little rustic shelter, but he's taken a passionate dislike to it. Simply loathes it. Absolutely refuses to go inside. You should see the dreadful expression on his face when he looks at it. And do you know what he called it yesterday? Oh, I hardly dare tell you. She looked around the room before leaning over and whispering. He called it the Bloody Hut.